Hello and thank you for joining us. I'm Edward Mills, the producer of the Abundant Mystic Teleseminar Series, and I am so pleased to have Marcy Shymoff with me here today on the call. Marcy is the author of the runaway bestseller, Happy for No Reason, Seven Steps to Being Happy from the Inside Out. Her book, which offers a revolutionary approach to lasting happiness, was number one on Amazon and debuted at number two on the New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller list. Now been translated into 28 languages. The paperback has just been released and is making another splash on the bestseller list. Marcy is also the host of the Happy for No Reason PBS special that aired nationwide and is a featured teacher in the hit film The Secret. Marcy is the woman's face of the biggest self-help book phenomenon in history. Her books, including Chicken Soup for the Woman's Soul and Chicken Soups for the Mother's Soul, have met with stunning success, selling more than 13 million copies. She's one of the best-selling female nonfiction authors of all time. Marcy, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with you. Happy for great reason. I love what you're doing. I love this topic of abundance, and I'm just really thrilled to be a part of it.
Awesome. Well, the question that I have been starting all of these interviews with is a deceptively simple question, and that is, what is your definition of abundance?
Well, abundance to me is fullness. It's fulfillment on all levels, on, you know, not just the material level, but the material, the emotional, the physical, the spiritual level of life. So it's really about feeling in every moment that there is always enough, that there is fullness wherever you are, in whatever you're experiencing, and in just every area of your life.
Now, that's obviously easier said than done for some people who might not be looking at a life filled with abundance on the physical world. So what would you suggest to someone who might be struggling in one or more areas of their life?
Wow. Well, the whole idea of abundance to me is not just one thing. It's really a lifestyle. It's an attitude. It's a belief system. And it's how you live day to day. So there are so many different things that I would say about that. But the first thing I would say is to really engage really put your attention on it. I mean, you know, what we put our attention on grows stronger in our life. So the idea of putting your attention in the right way on creating a life of abundance, I think, is a really important thing. And clearly everybody who's listening to this and is part of the series is doing that. But I think that people have been a little bit misguided in many ways because they've looked at – we've really only looked at abundance in terms of material wealth. And I think that when you expand the conversation to be an abundant life in all areas so that you feel rich in your relationships and you feel rich in your physical well-being and you feel rich emotionally and you feel rich materially, I think that's the real fulfillment in life and that's the real abundant life. So I would say to people to get started is to just really put your attention on all areas. And I think they all feed each other as well.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I've observed with modern-day mystics, the people who this series is aimed at, is that it is that the materialistic piece, that piece that often gets left behind because of that belief that money and spirit don't mix. What's your experience with that, and what might you say to someone who might have an abundant relationship with spirit but is lacking in the more material realm?
We human beings are put here on this planet to live in this material realm, and I am all for what an early teacher of mine called 200% of life, 100% spiritual and 100% material. And I think that really rounds out our life. I mean, if we're living life with some spiritual abundance, but our outer world isn't reflecting it, then we're not reflecting the magnificence of what life is. I mean, life is abundant. I believe that the universe is a benevolent universe. You know, Einstein once said that the most important question a person can ask himself is this a friendly universe? Mm. And I believe this is a friendly and abundant universe. And when we're truly living internally with that feeling and state of abundance, then, and we can manifest that externally, then we're really reflecting the purpose of being here in life. And, you know, I think this whole idea of abundance and spirituality not mixing has come from some old traditions where the spiritual people were the monks or the renunciates. And I certainly think that there are people whose destiny or dharma, whose life purpose it is to be more just solely a religious or, you know, a religious person like a monk or a nun. And perhaps there are some renunciate vows with those kinds of paths. But for most of us, we don't have that path as our destiny or our life purpose. And so our path is really to live in this very rich, abundant universe in a way that reflects this glorious inner and outer abundance. And I love, you know, Lynn Twist is one of my great, I consider her a mentor and she's a heroine in my world. Lynn Twist is, many people consider her the modern day Mother Teresa. And she has written a book called The Soul of Money, and she has raised hundreds of millions of dollars for the Hunger Project and now for an organization called the Pachamama Alliance. And she talks about abundance in a way that I really appreciate because it's different than the way a lot of other people talk about it. When we're really going for this, like, super, super abundant life, it's often coming from a scarcity belief system or a scarcity mentality. It's like, I better create enough abundance so I never feel scarce or without. Where she says there's a new paradigm, and that paradigm is a paradigm of sufficiency, which means I always have enough. I'm always full. There's always enough for me. The desire for too much is just really rooted from the same thing as a fear of lack. So rather than living in a fear of lack and feeling like I need to amass so much on the outside because I'm afraid I might lose something, to be living in the state of truly sufficiency, where you know that in every moment the universe is supporting you in exactly what it is you need, that you feel such a great sense of trust in this benevolent energy of the universe, and you know how to hook into that and gain the support of the laws of the universe, the support of the laws of nature, so that in every moment your needs are being fulfilled. And that's actually what the great, the really great masters in India, for example, used to practice, was the spontaneous fulfillment of desires, where they knew that any moment that they would desire something, that desire would be fulfilled very quickly by the universe. And that's real abundance.
I love that. I love that. And it ties into a question I wanted to ask you about your book. As I've been reading your book and thinking about how it ties into abundance, it almost seems to me that you could replace happy with abundant.
Yeah, I think that's true. Now, you know, my definition of happy for no reason, which is the book that you're referring to, happy for no reason really means having an inner state of peace and well-being that doesn't depend on your circumstances. So you're really living from a higher level of consciousness that has this feeling of connection to the universe, that all is well, that I have an inner state of peace and well-being no matter what's going on the outside. Now, interestingly enough, I believe that is also the basis for creating and manifesting the life of your dreams. You know, I'm in the film and book The Secret, which is about the law of attraction, and I've spoken a lot about the law of attraction. And what I think is that people have it backwards. We think that success is going to bring us happiness, but it's the other way around. It's happiness that brings us success, because when we're happier, we're vibrating at a higher level of consciousness. And it's that higher level of consciousness that's actually allowing us to attract to ourselves what it is we want more of in life. And I just want to read to you a quote from Rhonda Byrne, who is the creator of The Secret. And she writes this in The Secret about the law of attraction and the correlation to happiness. She says, I want to let you in on a secret to the secret. The shortcut to anything that you want in life is to be and feel happy now. It's the fastest way to bring money and anything else you want in your life. Focus on radiating out into the universe those feelings of joy and happiness. Everything that you want is an inside job. The outside world is the world of effects. It's just the result of our thoughts. So set your thoughts and your frequency on happiness. And I think that that's very key. If you want abundance, set your thoughts and your frequency on happiness. And from that platform of consciousness, then you can really more quickly attract to you what it is you want. And certainly we all know people in life who have perhaps an abundant outer life. They have a lot of success and financial wealth, but they are suffering. And a lot of money does not guarantee happiness. As a matter of fact, 40% of the wealthiest people in the world on Forbes' wealthiest list are more depressed than the average person. So the money isn't what you're looking for. We're looking for that inner state of freedom and well-being, and from that platform to be able to manifest the outer abundance that reflects it.
Hmm. Well, it's really interesting that you read that quote from Rhonda, because I'm on the exact same page in your book getting ready to read a quote from you.
Oh, well, cool.
Because one of the things that I've heard from modern-day mystics is when they watch The Secret, they kind of dismiss it because it seems so commercial and material.
Mm-hmm.
And you write here that though the law of attraction has worked like a charm for me in the spirit, in the material realm, I've received far greater rewards whenever I've applied it on the spiritual level to heal myself from heartbreaks by focusing on gratitude and to create transformation in my life by appreciating any step of progress, no matter how small.
Well, it's very true. I mean, a lot of people apply the law of attraction, which simply states that everything in the universe is made up of energy, and whatever we put our thoughts, our words, our feelings, and our actions behind is what we will draw or manifest into our lives. And so you can spend a lot of energy putting your attention on manifesting material wealth. You can also use that same energy and put it on manifesting a life of abundance, a life of joy and happiness that also includes material wealth. So you don't have to just limit it to applying the law of attraction for creating material wealth. And to be honest, I agree that the depiction in The Secret tended to really focus on the material side, but it opened a lot of people's eyes to the law of attraction and to the principles there. And there's a saying about meeting people where they are. You know, people are interested in creating that material wealth. So The Secret really hit home for so many people because it started them with where they were, and then it opened them to a new world. And I think that it was a really brilliant starting point for so many people around the world. And I'm so happy that it created such a very big wave of awareness about the power that we all have in our lives to create.
And I would say that Happy for No Reason in many ways does the same thing, because you focus on very practical steps that you can take to change the way you feel, and you also go into some very deeply spiritual ideas. So I think you're really, and that's probably why it's been such a runaway bestseller, is that you're getting people where they at in a wide range of people where they're at.
Well, you know, thank you for that. I really appreciate that. And here's the thing. I had a lot of success in my life. I really did sort of, I was one of those people, I wasn't born happy. I came out of the womb with existential angst. I was a pretty unhappy kid for no reason. I actually had a really great life, great family. Everything was great, except I just was not happy. And I wasn't happy because I was always a spiritual seeker and I could not find answers. I remember when I was probably 7 years old, really just bugging my parents about, you know, God and the purpose of life and, you know, those really tough questions. And they did their best to answer, but I was not satisfied. And I actually had my first sort of a spiritual aha moment when I was in the sixth grade and I was laying out in my backyard getting a suntan. And this was, you know, in the late 1960s, I guess. And using baby oil. We didn't know about SPF factor back then. And I went to my sister's room. She was 12 years older than I was. She still is 12 years older than I am. And I grabbed the skinniest book on her bookshelf that I could find because I was a very slow reader, and I wanted to just read a skinny book. And I went out, and I was laying out getting this tan, and the book that I got was a book called Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse.
Nice light reading for sunbathing.
Yeah. And I was probably 30 pages into the book, and I just burst into tears because I realized that there was something called a spiritual path, and that there were other people seeking what I was seeking. And that started me on this journey, and I meditated from the time I started formal meditation when I was 16. I became a teacher of meditation when I was 19, and I've had a very, very spiritual path. But along with that, I did a lot in the sort of material world and became a corporate consultant, and I did create a lot of success on the outer realms. But I realized that about 12 years ago, when I had a couple of Chicken Soup for the Soul books out, I was giving a speech to about 5,000 people. I'm sorry, 8,000 people. I was signing books for 3 days nonstop for all these people. Lines, just, you know, really long lines. I was at the height of my career. I had everything that I thought I wanted in life. I had, you know, that beautiful house, a great partner, wonderful friends. I had all these things. But at the end of that three-day fabulous height of my career kind of thing, I went back to my hotel room and I plopped on the bed and I burst into tears. And I said, okay, I've got everything that I thought I wanted, but I still feel this emptiness inside. This something isn't hitting me. It's not totally fulfilling. And it was at that moment I decided, okay, I can no longer fool myself into thinking that if I just get a little bit more in life, then I'll be happy. Which, by the way, I think is a really common thing. You know, I call it the I'll be happy when syndrome. If I just have this, then I'll be happy. If I just get the right husband or, the, you know, make more money or whatever it is, then I'll be happy. And I just realized at that moment I couldn't, it wasn't going to work. The gig was up here. I faced the reality, and at that moment I decided I'm going to find out the answer to how to be happy. And that's when I full force put myself into this field of studying happiness. And I realized, wow, there is actually a science of happiness out there. They're finding out what we can do truly to be happier. And, you know, we're cracking the code on happiness. And over these 12 years since I did that, since I started studying this, I have tried everything. I have put it all into practice in my life. And I absolutely can tell you without a doubt that this works. And I know that from my own life. I'd say, you know, back when I was a teenager, I'd give myself a D+ in happiness. I'd say now I get an A to an A-. Now, that doesn't mean that my life looks perfect. But what it means is that I feel happy inside. So however my life looks, it feels that I feel the perfection in it. You know, I say that people are happy for no reason. Don't look to extract their happiness from life, but instead they bring their happiness to life. And that, it's just the difference in how I feel in life is night and day. And I've had lots of challenges in these years. I mean, my mother was in the hospital last year for 6 weeks. I went through a divorce last year. It was an enlightened divorce. I mean, we actually were really great friends and really supportive of each other. But nonetheless, it was, you know, it's not fun to go through those experiences. But I still felt and feel deeply happy inside. And from this now, I feel a true abundance in life.
And that brings me to a question about being happy for no reason. And you sort of tongue-in-cheek at the beginning of the call, you said you're happy for good reason because we're on this call together. And one of the things that I've been catching myself since I've read your book is, you know, well, if I'm supposed to be happy for no reason, then is it okay to be happy for good reason? You know what I mean?
Such a great question. I love that question. And I don't think anybody's ever asked that of me, and it's such a brilliant question. What I found is that there's these four stages on the happiness continuum. There's unhappy, which we all know, you know. And by the way, do you know that 1 out of 5 women in North America right now is on antidepressants?
Mm.
We have an epidemic of unhappiness in our society. We have more than we've ever had. We make more money, we have more, and yet we're unhappier than ever. So it's clear that it's not the outer stuff that's going to solve the problem. Then one step up is what I call happy for bad reason. And that's when you're unhappy and you're kind of trying to disguise it all or mask it all, so you go for the outer things that don't support your life for happiness. So you shop too much, or you drink too much, or you eat too much. It leads to these addictions. And all that's doing is covering up your unhappiness. Then there's the state you asked about, happy for good reason. Mm-hmm. And that's when you have, you know, a lot of the things you want in life. You know, you've got the great relationships and a good career and all of that. I am all for that. I believe in that 1,000%. It's wonderful. The problem is, if we base our happiness on those things, as soon as we lose those things, there goes our happiness. And we see a lot of that these days as the economy has been affected. People who were basing their happiness on their reasons are now finding themselves stressed out, miserable, less resilient. So I'm not saying to not have those things and not to enjoy them fully, but I'm saying go a step farther. And that step farther is happy for no reason, that step of finding the inner source of peace, happiness, and abundance. And then all the reasons are just icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I don't know if you remember this, but right at the beginning of, you have the four pillars, and at the beginning of your chapter on the pillar of the mind, you tell the story about the man dressed in the $3,000 suit. Do you remember that story?
I do remember that story. It's a great little story. Gosh, I haven't told it in a while, so let me just take a second and try to recover that story. This was at an Indian sage once was speaking, and he was taking a question from a man who was dressed in a really expensive suit, you know, $3,000 suit, wearing these classy shoes, and the guy was just dripping with gold jewelry everywhere, and the man raised his hand and said, what do I need to give up to experience true happiness and inner peace? Well, and the sage said, there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is that you don't have to give up any of your stuff. Poverty certainly isn't the way to happiness. But the bad news is that you do have to do something that might even be harder for you. You have to give up the way you think.
Yeah, that's so perfect.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And, you know, so many of us, so many people have been trained so badly about money, about abundance, about their thought patterns and their beliefs about abundance. And that's really a lot of where the retraining begins, is in your thoughts. You know, we have 60,000 thoughts a day. For the average person, 80% of those are negative. And scientists call it a negativity bias. What that means is that we actually have a tendency to remember or hold on to the negatives more strongly than we hold on to the positives. I call it the Velcro Teflon syndrome. And here's what I mean by that. We Velcro the negatives to us. They just stick to our minds, whereas the positives that happen in our lives are more like Teflon, where they slide off of us. A simple example of that is if you get 10 compliments in a day and 1 criticism, what do you tend to remember at the end of the day?
Yeah.
You remember the criticism, right?
Right.
So what we found is people who are happier, and I believe people who are more abundant, have reversed that ratio. They have trained themselves. They've actually created a new neural pathways in the brain. And science is now showing us that we have neuroplasticity and we can create new neural pathways in the brain all the way up until the day we die. And those new neural pathways are favoring more the positives rather than the negatives. So that's a whole process. And I give a number of tools and techniques that people can use to very, I think, effectively and easily shift their old thought patterns and create new neural pathways. So that's one of the aspects to both abundance and happiness.
Would you mind sharing one or two of those tools?
Well, I use other people's tools because they're so effective. I don't create the tools. I just find them and share them with people.
There's nothing new under the sun.
There is nothing new under the sun. Some of my favorite ones that I love to use are the Sedona Method by Hale Dwoskin, which is a wonderful method of letting go of old beliefs. Another one is called The Work of Byron Katie. Simple process of asking yourself four questions and introducing then a turnaround statement. And all of these are available in my programs, in the Happy for No Reason program, or also on the specific people's websites. Another tool I love is called the Emotional Freedom Technique, or EFT. It's a simple tapping technique where you tap on various acupressure meridians that help you release your old belief systems. You know, I also use a very simple process that I love. It may sound like, what does that have to do with happiness and abundance? But it has a lot to do with it. And it's a Kuhuna Hawaiian technique called Ho'oponopono.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a process of forgiveness where you say to yourself these four sentences over and over again. And I don't know why it works. I got to be honest. Not sure why it works. I just know that it works. I've used it a lot and it works great. And these sentences are, you can use it towards other people if you're having a problem or, you know, a challenge in judgments on somebody or anger, resentment, or you can do it on yourself. And the four sentences are, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. I'll tell you a really quick story. About 6 months ago, my sister, who I mentioned earlier, is 12 years older than I am, got very mad at me about something, and she stopped talking to me for a few months, and that had never happened before, and it was really uncomfortable, but I was feeling really resentful because I didn't think that what she got mad at me for had any justification or reason, and how could she be treating me this way? Well, but a couple months into this, we had to move my mother into an assisted living place, and I was really dreading this because I was going to be with just five family members in this small one-bedroom new apartment of my mother's and with my sister, and I thought, oh, God, that's going to be really uncomfortable since she's not talking to me. And sure enough, I arrived that day, and she doesn't even look up at me, and we spend the first couple hours, you know, working in the small apartment together and not talking. And after a little while, I just couldn't stand it, so I took a break and I went to my car. And I sat in my car, and I remembered a story about a Tibetan monk who had been imprisoned by the Chinese government and tortured horribly for 20 years. And when he was released, the Dalai Lama interviewed him and said, when did you feel that you were in the most danger? And the monk replied, I felt that I was in the most danger when I couldn't feel love and forgiveness for my my guards and the people who were imprisoning me and torturing me. And I thought, oh, my God, here is a guy who is clearly being wronged, in my book at least. He's clearly being treated wrongly, and yet he is feeling love and compassion and forgiveness for his guards. And here I am with my sister who, you know, I mean, you could argue that she wasn't really treating me horribly, and I couldn't forgive. So I sat in the car for 15 minutes and I did that Ho'oponopono technique. I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. And about 10 minutes into it, I really started realizing that my sister wasn't mad at me for that little thing. She was probably mad about a number of things that had happened over many years. And I could see how she might feel those things. And I started feeling so much more compassion. And after about 15 minutes, I just felt a whole lot of love in my heart. I went back into the room, into the apartment, and I didn't say a word. Within 2 minutes, my sister grabbed me and said, hey, come on, let's go unpack Mom's closet together. And then we went to lunch, and she said, here, have my baked potato. It was an entire 180 turnaround. So I took my brother to the side. I said, okay, what did you say to her while I was gone? He said, Marcy, no one said anything to her. What on earth did you do? So it was so powerful. And, you know, I have to say, I believe that when we clear all of our feelings of anger or resentment or anything, and we open up to a state of compassion, forgiveness, and love, then we open up to a state of abundance, and more abundance flows into our lives.
That's so perfect, because this whole program is about how abundant mystics really do work in both worlds, how they recognize the power of the mystery, the unseen world, to create change, to create abundance. And also they don't neglect or try to reject the physical world, the practical stuff that needs to get done. And I love that throughout your whole book, you really bring in all of that. You bring in all four of those pillars that you need and that need to be balanced in order to live a life of happy for no reason or abundant for no reason.
Yeah, you know, you need it. We need it all. We need the mind, the body, the heart, and the soul. We need our relationships to support our happiness and abundance. We need to be connected with our purpose in life. All of those things are critical to having a happy and abundant life. I just want to share, there's an Indian 5,000 years ago, I don't know how many years ago, 3 or 5,000 years ago, I think, there was an Indian sage named Patanjali, and he wrote the Patanjali Yoga Sutras. And in these Yoga Sutras, they were techniques for how to take your consciousness and manifest into the physical world through your consciousness. And these were techniques that seemed like magic to all of us, you know, how you can manifest out of thin air certain objects, or how you can, know certain things, where something is located, and things like that. But the technique is a very interesting technique, I think, that we can apply in our lives today to manifesting in the outer world from an inner level of consciousness. And I'm just going to give you the three steps of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. In Sanskrit, they're called Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. In Western language, in our language, there are three steps that were taught to me by a consultant of mine that I've used for years he's a coach of mine named Bill Levesey. And the three steps, I love them because they rhyme. They are intention, attention, and no tension.
I love
them. And let me just go over what these mean. Intention means you've got to be clear about what it is that you want to manifest in your life. Attention means that you need to put your thoughts, your words, your feelings, and your actions behind it, your attention on that, you know, where attention goes, energy flows. But the third step, and this is the one that I think most of us in our culture tend to overlook, and that's that step of no tension, that step of letting go, of being relaxed, of surrendering, of being open to receiving without strain. What I find, so many people come to me and say, oh my God, I've tried to use the secret and I've tried the law of attraction and it's just not working. And the place where it's not working for them is that place of no tension. They're hanging on and hanging on and hanging on and persisting. Now, persistence is good, but there's one level at which you ultimately need to let go and allow the abundance, allow the brilliant ideas, allow the ahas to come into you. You know, Einstein said that all of his greatest discoveries came when he was taking a walk or doing the dishes, when he wasn't thinking about it. Now, he'd think about the problems, he'd put his attention on them, he had his attention on them, but then he would let go, and then the brilliance would just rush in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think everybody's had the experience of having their great aha moments in the shower.
Right.
Or, you know, and I think that that's true of us with abundance as well. And that's why when you live in a state of happy for no reason, when you're living in this state of all is well in the universe, then there's not that grabby, needy, desperate kind of feeling that holds away our wealth from us.
I love the rhyming piece.
I
say attraction without attachment.
Ah, I like that, attraction without attachment. Another phrase I also like to use is high intention, low attachment.
Nice.
Yeah, it's that idea of being able to let go. You know, if you're a salesman, you know that you've got to be clear on what you want. You've got to put your attention on, but you also know that you've got to be willing to walk away from the sale. It's the person that has enough confidence, enough ease, that all is well in the universe no matter what, that they could walk away from the sale. That creates the space to make the sale happen.
Yeah.
And it's true everywhere, high intention, low attachment.
Modern-day mystics, in my experience, a lot of them seem to have trouble with the intention piece. Often because intention, they associate, again, going back to this, you know, poverty consciousness thing, that either they don't know what they want, or they it seems like maybe they focus so much on the material stuff because they feel like they're supposed to, but then there's that inner tweak that doesn't allow them to align with that intention very clearly, and so it just doesn't feel right on some level.
Yeah, I think I've seen that as well, and I think that that's true when there's not that connection between your spiritual life and your material life, when there's a disconnect and you think that they're separate. But when you feel as though the material world is an expression of your spiritual world, where the outer is just merely the expression, and there's not a disconnect, there's not a guilt. I think that some people really still have that guilt of, oh, I shouldn't be wanting these things in the outer world. When it's coming colored with that kind of a flavor or vibration, it doesn't work. But when I think you really deeply connect that my outer world is a fabulous expression of my inner world, and let me just share that in, you know, joy is a fabulous thing. It's not something to be guilty about. Having comfort, having beauty, having all those things is not something to be feel guilty about. It's something to be proud of. And yet I think a lot of spiritual people think, oh, no, it's not okay.
Do you set specific intentions or goals financially, or do you mostly focus your intentions on the things you're going to create, the things you're going to put out in the world?
You know, I've gone through variations of that through my life. Can I share with you, and I will answer that question, but along with that, can I just share with you some of the things that I've done to create the outer abundance in my life?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I was early on a student of religious science and Unity Church, New Thought spiritual systems. And I early on began tithing. And I have been tithing for 30-plus years now. And I tithed when I had nothing, and I tithed when I had lots. And I really believe that tithing is a very important principle because two reasons. Tithing, giving 10% of your income to the source of your spiritual wealth. I think that it, first of all, creates that feeling of, it's proof that you have a trust in the universe, that you know that no matter what you have, there's always enough to give away 10%. And it also allows you to give back to the source of your spiritual wealth, and it creates a balance on that level, that you're feeding back to the source of your spiritual abundance. So I really believe that that is a very important tool for abundance, and I still do it to this day. I also have, from very early on, done a lot of visioning. I really know that you do not create the next level of your life without seeing it first. You've got to have a clear vision in your mind of what it is that you intend to manifest. So I have always had clarity about what I want and done visioning with it. In terms of specificity, there are times where I'll get really specific and there are times when I'm less specific, but I tend towards the specific. So, for example, when I wrote Happy for No Reason, the very first thing I did, and this was in 2004 when I came up with the title for the book and I started working on the book proposal. very first thing I did was I created an index card that said, happy for no reason is a, Happy for No Reason is published by my favorite New York publisher. It comes out in January of 2008. I receive an advance of X number of dollars. It becomes a number one, an instant number one New York Times bestseller and inspires and transforms the lives of millions of people around the world. So I wrote that card and I put it on my vision board right across from my desk. I looked at that card every day. Now, I didn't study it, but it's just, you know, I'd be on the phone and my eyes would land on that card. 2 years later, I went to New York and met with 15 different publishers. And I ended up getting a contract with my favorite New York publisher, just as the card said. The book came out in January of 2008, just as the card said that had been written 4 years earlier. I got an advance to the penny that I had written on that card. Now, I should have written a bigger advance, right?
Yeah, there you go.
And it didn't become a number one New York Times bestseller instantly. It became a number two New York Times bestseller. But I wasn't complaining. I'm not complaining. And it's now out in 31 languages, and it is, I think, inspiring and transforming the lives of millions of people around the world. So did that happen because I wrote that card on my vision board? Of course not. I did a lot of action to support it. Do I think that that was one of the pieces? Yes, I really do. So I really think that there are things that we can do in terms of being clear and specific about what we want, about putting them on a vision board and seeing that vision board on a regular basis, about doing visualizations with ourselves. I also used to walk through airports and I would see my book in the front window of these airport bookstores. And I remember the very first, I saw there was Minneapolis Airport was I think the first time where I visioned my book sitting in the front window of that airport. And it was such a thrill 4 years later to actually see my book sitting in the front window of the Minneapolis Airport. The power of our minds is just phenomenal and the power of our ability to envision.
That's great.
And I honestly believe that creating abundance in our life is not just one technique. It's not just, let me do this. It's how we live our life. Do you wake up in the morning grateful? You know, there's that whole saying that what we appreciate appreciates. When we put our attention on what's working in our life, that's what we get more of. So do you wake up in the morning feeling appreciative and grateful for your life, setting the tone for the day on a tone of appreciation? Do you meditate? Do you take care of your body? Do you feel that life juice flowing in your body? And I talk in Happy for No Reason about how you create the biochemistry of happiness so that there's the happy juices flowing through your cells all day. Do you have a support network that surrounds you and supports you in creating happiness and abundance in your life? Do you have mastermind groups? I mean, I've had those for years. Do you tithe? Do you work on forgiveness in your heart? Do you do visioning? You know, it's a moment by moment thing about how you live your life. And while that may sound overwhelming, like, oh my God, well, how am I going to get started on doing this? What I tell people is to start with one thing.
Right.
Only change one thing at a time. Do that for 21 days. As you know, 21 days is the amount of time generally that it takes to change a new habit. And once you have that one new thing habituated, then pick another new thing and do that until that's really habituated. And that's the way you can transform your life most quickly and easily.
Well, there's one very, very simple, it's a phrase from your book, and I can't remember where it is in the book right now, but it's just the simple phrase, I'm thankful for everything and I have no complaints.
Oh, I love that.
It's so simple, and yet it changes the way I feel instantly when I say that.
It's really beautiful. You know, there's a quote by Meister Eckhart, who was a 13th century theologian, and he said, if the only prayer that you said in your whole life was thank you, that would suffice. And I just love that because that prayer of gratitude is so beautiful. And the quote that you were thinking of has to do with a story in Happy for No Reason by a friend of mine who just uses thankfulness all the time in his life. And I love stories because, you know, my background is chicken soup for the soul. Yeah. So we know how powerful stories are. It's what sticks with people. And so in Happy for No Reason, I made sure to include these very moving chicken soup-like stories about people who have really found how to live in a state of happy for no reason, along with the scientific research that a lot of people like to have. And then I think the most important part are the tools that people can use immediately to create greater happiness or raise their happiness set point in their life. And so the mantra you were talking about from that story was, thank you for everything, I have no complaints. Yeah, it's a great way to live life. Thank you for everything. I have no complaints. And here's a little tip for a suggestion for people. If you do feel a complaint in your life, if you do feel victimized in a certain area or that something isn't going your way, choose to believe. Just do an experiment in your life and choose to believe for a few minutes that everything is perfect in the universe, that there are no mistakes, and that there is a benevolent, friendly universe that is looking out for you. It's on your side. And so if something is happening that doesn't look the way you want it to happen, ask yourself this question. If this were happening for a higher purpose, what would that purpose be? If this were happening right now to me for a higher purpose, what would that purpose be? And you will always find an answer to that question. And if you assume that the universe is delivering everything to you on purpose, on a gold platter, to help you live the most extraordinary, miraculous, spectacular life there is, then the only way to approach everything that happens to you is with that feeling of thank you. And if this were happening to me for a higher purpose, what can I learn from this? What's the gift?
I love that. And it's so true. And you know, I think most people have the ability to look back on events that weren't so happy in the moment and see the purpose. But it's that ability to have that perspective in the moment that's so hard.
Exactly. That's exactly it. You know, if you ask anybody, I do this, I ask my audiences, how many of you have had a crisis in your life? And everybody, or a challenge, and everybody raises their hand. And then I say, and for how many of you, was that one of the most important and significant and beneficial things that's ever happened to you? And 99% of the room raises their hand. And so we know that the crisis in the moment often turns into the greatest gift. So the real master is the person who can, in the moment that the crisis is happening, say, I know this is happening for my greatest good in mind, and I'm going to find what that gift is.
Do you have a practice that you do on a daily basis specifically related to abundance?
Well, I do a meditation practice every day, and that meditation practice has changed over the years. I think that I think that often that happens, that as we grow, our practices need to change. I don't specifically do an abundance practice, but I do open myself up, I think, to receiving. I'm very, very aware that I've been very good at giving, and I've had maybe some blocks towards receiving, and I think that a lot of people can relate to that. And so right now, one of my practices is to look at how I can open to receive throughout the day. So when somebody offers me something, instead of pushing it away, I open to it and say, wow, This is coming to me, and I'm just going to receive this with great gratitude and appreciation. I'm opening more now to receiving pleasure in my life. I told you about this coach that I have, and I'm going to tell you something that I actually don't think I've ever told on a teleseminar before. I call this my secret weapon to success and abundance, and that is that I believe in life that there is a timing for everything. There's divine timing. And that when you work with the divine timing, with the right timing in your life, you can actually make the most of the opportunities present in life. And I do this through something called Vedic astrology. Vedic astrology is East Indian astrology. It's based on the Vedas, which are scriptures from 5,000 years ago. And they were very, very, very specific astrologers. astrologers. And the Vedic astrologer that I work with, the man that I've mentioned earlier, Bill Levesey, is also a scientist and he's a real guy. He's got a PhD in educational consulting and very, very smart guy. So this isn't some woo-woo thing. This is a very scientific practice. And what I've found is that there are certain times in my life where there is more opportunity, where the planets are aligned in a particular way, where there's more opportunity for a material success. And then there are other times where it's better time to maybe go inward and do a little inward practice. And so I will tell you that in 1990, I was told that in September of 1996, I'd have a best-selling book. I laughed at the idea. I scoffed at it because I said, I'm not a writer, and I don't have anything to write about. And he said, well, I don't care. It's right here in your chart. And sure enough, September 1996, my very first book came out, Chicken Soup for the Woman's Soul, and went to number one on the New York Times bestseller list that week. Now, I could not have made that happen if it had not been, I don't believe. It was a miracle that it all happened. I actually came up with the idea of Chicken Soup for the Woman's Soul when I was on a 7-day silent meditation retreat. I was really frustrated with my career and I was hitting my head up against the wall, and I decided to go on a 7-day silent meditation retreat, which, by the way, was something I had never done before. I hadn't been silent for more than 2 hours before that in my life. And on the 4th day, in the middle of a meditation, a light bulb went off in my head and I saw the words Chicken Soup for the Woman's Soul. Now, my mentor was Jack Canfield, so I was already connected at the time, and I had really done a lot of my work. I was a speaker. I was speaking to women's audiences, which I believe was why that message of Chicken Soup for the Woman's Soul came through me, because I was already immersed in that field. As soon as I had that thought, I knew it was a gift from the universe, and there was only one problem, and that was that I still had 3 more days of silence. I couldn't tell anybody about my great epiphany. But as soon as the silence was over, I ran to the closest payphone and I called up Jack and I said, Jack, I've got it. Chicken Soup for the Woman's Soul. Now, none of the other Chicken Soup books had been out. It was only the first book that was out. Nobody had thought of these specialty ideas. So, you know, he said, oh, my God, that's a great idea. And he called the publisher, and the publisher said, oh, my God, that's a great idea. And that's how I got the contract. But I think it was a combination of, you know, I think it was Napoleon Hill said, luck is when preparedness meets opportunity.
I love that.
And I had done my homework. I was prepared. I actually had taught business writing at AT&T and other Fortune 500 companies for 10 years. And I really knew writing. I was a speaker. I was working in the field. I had studied all of this for years. Jack Canfield, as I said, was my mentor. So luck was when preparedness, I was prepared, met opportunity. The opportunity arose and the epiphany came, I think, from the universe. And I got very lucky, and it was all in tune with that timing that was right for me. So I use Vedic astrology on a regular basis, quarterly actually, to find out when is the right time to make use of the various opportunities that are present in my life.
It's so interesting that you told that story, because just Sunday night, I was talking to a friend. I was planning on launching this tomorrow, actually, Tuesday. My friend said, are you sure you want to do that on Tuesday? Because you know that Friday is the first new moon of the year, the first new moon of the decade, a solar eclipse, Mercury goes direct. It's like this massive convergence of celestial events that are supporting new endeavors. And I just thought, well, this seems right.
Well, I'm so sorry, but I have to. I'm going to add a little monkey wrench into this.
Uh-oh.
And that is, according to the astrology that I've used, it's very rare that you want to start anything new on an eclipse. So you may want to have that looked at by an astrologer, and I'm happy to. But at any rate, the idea and the concept is really right on, that when we make best use of nature's timing, we can get the best results. And I will tell you, I will say that I believe that is my secret weapon to success and abundance.
Wow.
It's the extra piece that a lot of people really don't know or make use of. And I'm a very practical person, and I don't believe things until I see proof in my life. And I've seen proof in my life over and over again for the last 20 years that it's absolutely undeniable in my experience. But I tell people, don't take anybody's word for anything. Use your life as an experiment. And if something resonates with you, if it sounds right, then try it out in your own life and see if it works.
Well, and what I love, and it sounds like you go here, is that you look for proof, but you don't have to explain it.
I can't always understand why things like that Ho'oponopono story of, you know, please forgive me, thank you, I love you, I'm sorry, works. I mean, I understand conceptually that when we place our thoughts in a certain energetic vibration, that that we get certain results. So I do understand the basic energy of it, but I'm not a scientist. I don't need to know all the exact details. I think some people are scientifically minded, and they do need to know the exact details. And if that's the case, then there's a lot of books out there about those details. But I think there is a level of faith that propels life forward. And if you experiment openly with a certain level of faith and you see the results, then that builds your faith for the next time.
I love that. Well, Marcy, we're just out of time here. I'm wondering, do you want to just take a moment and just tell people how they can benefit from your Happy for No Reason course, and of course the book. I highly, highly recommend the book. But I know you also have a course.
I do. You know, I've had people have so have really, really asked me for a long time. You know, I want to do a program. I want to get on a happiness program. And so I created what I consider to be the best happiness program out there. And it's because it really, really works, and it works quickly. And it's the best of everything I've found. It's called the Happy for No Reason Personal Learning Course. And it's 8 CDs and a workbook. It's got accelerated learning tools. I teamed up with a company called Learning Strategies, and they're the experts, the premier experts in accelerated learning. And so I have all these cool accelerated learning tools in there. And people can find out about all of that on my website, which is happyfornoreason.com. You can I have a lot of free tools on there. I have the Happy for No Reason questionnaire, so you can see where you stand on the Happy for No Reason scale, how well you're doing. I have a free downloadable recording that we're going to offer on Happy for No Reason action plan, your happiness action plan. And there are, you know, I really invite people to join what I call the happiness revolution that's going on. I'm finding that there's more and more people around the world that are saying, I know that I have to live life differently, and I want to be part of this next wave of the planet to create a higher energetic vibration on the planet, and I want to join this happiness revolution. And that's what we're doing. And so please join me at happyfornoreason.com. And, you know, if I can, I'd love to end with this one Chinese proverb that's a wish. You know, people are always asking me, Marcy, is wanting to be happy or wanting to be abundant selfish? And I honestly believe it's the least selfish thing that we could do on the planet, because when we change, when we live a happy and abundant life, we change everybody around us and we change the vibration on the planet. So I'd like to end with this Chinese proverb that goes like this. It says, when there is light in the soul, there will be beauty in the person. When there is beauty in the person, there will be harmony in the house. When there is harmony in the house, there will be order in the nation. And when there is order in the nation, there will be peace in this world. And so my prayer and my wish for all of us is that we feel that light in our souls, that abundant happiness in our souls. And through that, we create a planet of peace, of love, of abundance. And everyone who's listening today is part of that happiness and abundant revolution.
What a beautiful way to end. Thank you so much.
Well, I've had a great time being with you. Just getting to talk about this wonderful subject makes me feel happier and more abundant.
Me too. And I have a feeling that just your energy is so enlivening and uplifting that I know that people listening to this will have that experience as well.
Wonderful. Well, I wish everyone an amazing, miraculous 2010. It is the year of true abundance, true miracles, true happy for no reason, true faith, trust, and love. So I wish that for everyone.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Marcy.
Thank you.